WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Anaïs Nin wrote diaries, novels, and erotica that changed the lives of many of her readers. This was particularly true in the late 60s and early 70s, when the women's movement and the counterculture coincided. The message many readers took away was that if women were brave enough, they could be both sexual and independent and devote their lives to art and love. Deirdre Baer was never affected that way by Nin's writing. What Baer wanted to know was who paid the price for the life of this self-involved woman. Deirdre Baer has written a new biography of Anaïs Nin. Baer is also the author of biographies of Simone de Beauvoir and Samuel Beckett. Baer doesn't think Nin was an original thinker in the way de Beauvoir was. According to Baer, Nin was a major-minor writer. Nin died of cancer in 1977, at the age of 73. I asked Deirdre Baer if she now sees Nin as incredibly self-involved or as someone who made personal discoveries that inspired others to change the ways they lived.
She was both, really. She certainly was self-involved. She certainly was narcissistic. She was her own favorite subject. She wrote every day. There were 260,000 pages of diary writing plus innumerable folders of loose writings, and they were all about herself. She was her favorite subject. But in the process of writing about herself, she would write about herself, at the beginning of her 40 years of psychoanalysis. She would write about herself throughout her many love affairs with, among others, Henry Miller, probably the most famous. She would write about her troubles, her travails with various publishers who continuously rejected her work and even rejected the diary. So that all the while that she was writing about herself, this narcissistic self-involvement, at the same time, she was representing, to my mind, many of the major attributes of the 20th century.
Some people called her diaries her liaries because they felt there were so many lies in them. How close to the truth are her diaries? And I guess we have to distinguish here between the two sets, the published and the unpublished.
Not only the published and the unpublished, but the recently published so-called unexpurgated diaries, which are now appearing, Henry and June being the first volume in that series. When she decided to publish the diary and when she finally found a publisher for it, she realized that there was much material that she couldn't allow to be made public because so many people would be hurt, including each of her two husbands, for she was a bigamist, and members of her family, her mother, her brothers. If they knew about all of her sexual peccadilloes, they would be astonished as well as deeply hurt. And so she had to find a way to write about these things without actually writing about them in their entirety. So these were many aspects of the diary, many passages that either had to be deleted or had to be changed. Much of her activity she had to give to other persons. And in several key instances, for example, a cousin, Eduardo, who was very important to her throughout her life, he was very much afraid that she would insert his life into her published diary. And so she needed him. As she said, I need someone to be the person who introduces me to psychoanalysis. I'll simply change his sex and change his name. And so Eduardo became Marguerite, a mythical character who stayed in the diary. So these are the kinds of things that she did.
I think Nin is known for two different types of writing, best known for two different types of writing. And one is her diaries, and the other is her erotica.
Yes.
And, I mean, her erotica, I think, is among the most widely read erotica for at least a certain generation of women. And Nin was, in her own life, I think, very preoccupied with sex for many years. How did that become a preoccupation of hers?
I think it started with D.H. Lawrence. Up till that time, we had all of the Victorian obfuscation. We had never faced sex directly. Well, Nin read Lawrence's book, and she was recently married. She had been married for several years to a very fine man whom she adored and with whom she had a complex relationship. His name was Hugh Giler. She called him Hugo. The problem was that neither one of them knew a thing about sex when they got married, and they had a relatively celibate marriage for the greater part of their first year of married life together, so that when Nin read Lawrence, to use a colloquial expression, it blew her mind. And then, almost immediately after, she met Henry Miller, who had been writing about sexuality with the same openness that Lawrence had written. And very quickly, she fell into a sexual affair with Henry Miller. And from that point on, the act of sex became, for many years, the paramount facet of her existence. At one point, just to finish up on this, at one point, one of her analysts said to her, "You simply have to find a way to relate to people which is not sexual." And she said, "I can't do it."
Why would she have so much trouble?
Because she felt that the only way that she could express even simple friendship was through giving her body in the act of sex. This really went back to her childhood. She, it's fairly well known through the published diaries that her father abandoned the family when she was 10 or 11 years old. And her mother took Anaïs and her two brothers to New York. And the father was an absent figure for 20 years. Anaïs didn't see him again until she was 33 and he was 55. And at that point, they began an incestuous relationship.
What did her friends think about her incestuous relationship with her father?
Well, you see, they never knew it. They never knew this until the unexpurgated Henry and June appeared, because all of those passages had been deleted from the first published diary. She had hinted about it to many of her close friends. They had told me the various ways in which she had hinted about it. But there really was no real proof until Henry and June was published, and also until I was able to read the unpublished diary entries and to talk to the surviving members of her family who were in Paris at the time this happened.
How did she feel about it herself?
The curious thing is, I've talked to a number of persons who do scholarship on incest victims and willing participants, and they tell me that when a parent and child are separated at a very young, when the child is very young, and when they come together as adults, that this is far more frequent than we know. There are many studies which have been done to prove that biological parent and child who come together as adults frequently do engage in incest. Her father was a man without boundaries. As one of his children said, "I would put nothing past my father. I would believe anything of him." And consequently, he and his daughter, Anaïs Nin, and her father, Joaquin Nin, engaged in an affair for a period of something between 4 to 6 months.
My guest is Deirdre Baer, and she's written a new biography of Anaïs Nin. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Deirdre Baer. She's written a new biography of Anaïs Nin. How did she start writing erotica or pornography, whatever word you want to use?
Well, that happened in 1940-41. They were in New York. War had broken out, and Henry Miller had extraordinary expenses. And she was paying for him for about 10 years. She kept Henry Miller. He was her kept man. She gave him an allowance every month that allowed him to devote himself to his writing. And the allowance, of course, came from her banker husband. And Henry couldn't write the pornography because he wanted to devote himself to his own writing. So she took over because she needed to pay his rent. And the collector, the so-called collector of it, didn't want her to put any poetry in it. He wanted nothing but sex. He wanted 100 pages a month. And he wanted them to be all entirely about sex. Well, everyone who has read this erotica, which consists now of two books, Little Birds and Delta of Venus, realizes that she wrote about sex and sexuality from a woman's perspective, and she wrote about it with deep feeling and a great deal of poetry, and it really is some of her finest writing. That's the irony of it.
Maybe you could say something about why they caught on so well with women readers.
Well, I think for the same reason that the diaries did. The first diary was published in 1966 when the feminist movement was really just beginning, when women were seeing, understanding the possibilities that were open to them in their lives, in their human relationships. And the erotica, which came out a decade later, in the late 70s, just after her death, actually, it was the same sort of thing. By this time, the feminist movement had really caught hold. And so women felt freer to discuss their sexuality and felt freer to explore various kinds of sexuality. And so here came these beautifully written books about the sexuality of a woman written by a woman, and certainly they captured the imagination not only of women but of men.
I think one of the reasons why Nin's writing appeals or has appealed so much to women is because some of it explores the role of woman. You quote her as having said earlier in her life, "I didn't want to rival men. I didn't want to steal a man's creation, steal his thunder. Creation and femininity seem incompatible." And she talked about how aggressive the act of creation was. A lot of women of her generation just assumed that a woman's role was to support a man and not to be an artist or any kind of professional in her own right. Do you interpret Nin's statement here as a sign of the times or as something more personal than that?
Well, she certainly did say everything that you said. The interesting thing was, all the while she was mouthing those statements, her behavior was quite the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
She was saying that she needed to be, or she wanted to be, she felt her role was to be the helpmate of the man. But at the same time, she was so jealous of Henry Miller and so eager to be accepted as a writer the way he was. When he began to be known, for example, she said, T.S. Eliot is writing him letters praising his work. Why isn't he doing it for me? That kind of thing. So that all the while that she was setting herself up to be the perfect helpmate, at the same time, her actions were constantly defying that role. She wanted to be the writer. She wanted the attention to be hers. She would say, for example, of Virginia Woolf and Rebecca West, writers like that, they write like men. They're so masculine. But she yearned to write the way they did and to have the reputation that they did.
At a certain time of her life, I think it was when she was around 42, she's much more upfront about that and says that she decided to become the writer herself.
Yes, this was after she broke with Henry. By that time, he had gone off to California, and she was living in Greenwich Village and had bought herself a printing press to publish the novels that no commercial publisher would take. She said, you know, if no one else wants it, I'll simply do it myself. So she really was a pioneer, very brave about that.
I don't walk away from your biography of Anais Nin liking her very much. She seems really narcissistic, hopelessly self-absorbed. But I'm fascinated by the contradictions that you write about, that her life represents.
Yeah, that for me, that was what kept me involved in this book for the 3 years or so that it took me to write it, because everything that she did, everything that she said was a contradiction, and yet at the same time, all of these contradictions really add up to the stuff of every woman's life. I really think that every woman in the world can read this woman's life and not only can learn something from it, but can also learn what not to be, what not to do.
Are there people who are angry with this book because she kind of burst the bubble in a way, because this inspirational, sensual, poetic figure is more damaged than Nin's own writings would lead you to believe?
Yeah, that always happens with biography. And I'm reminded of a column that I wrote for the New York Times, a HERS column about Simone de Beauvoir. And the headline writer, grasping for a headline at the last moment, actually gave me the phrase that means a great deal to me when I think about both Beauvoir's life and Anaïs Nin's life. The headline was, "Do as she wrote, not as she did."
Well, how does that apply to Nin?
Well, it applies to Nin because in her writing, you know, again, these diaries, so inspirational for women. You can be anything you want to be. You can do anything you want to do. You can shape your relationships to make you happy. You can relate to people in ways that create a better world, all of this sort of thing. That's what she wrote. What she did, in effect, was to wear herself out, running between two men, making herself, what shall we say, a doormat, a housemaid, whatever, for any number of men, denying her own writing, denying her own creativity to satisfy the needs, what she perceived to be the needs of other people. So she certainly didn't live the life that she wrote about. And that's what I find is so infinitely sad about her.
Deirdre Baer, she's the author of Anaïs Nin, A Biography. This is Fresh Air.